My job today is to talk about the power of a good word. What do you know about the power of words? When have you remembered being deeply encouraged by something someone took the time to communicate to you? When have you been challenged or inspired? I remember the challenge of someone who challenged me into a leadership role as a young man, believing that I could take a path that would be difficult, and standing there beside to assist me in it. Someone to believe in you and took the time to say so. I remember a seventh grade teacher, Mr. Clifford. I had made some rather dubious friends in seventh grade. Three of the four of them spent a significant amount of time in prison after our acquaintance. This teacher took me aside and thought he saw a different path for me. And he encouraged me to reach out to a different path than the one I was headed with these other fellows. Someone who expressed appreciation or offered affirmation to notice what's good. You don't need to give anybody the job of noticing what's wrong. That one seems to be well covered. But the idea of having the job that we would notice what was good and affirm it. To offer words of support, especially in difficult seasons of life. I remember in one of those seasons, someone saying to me, "You're a good man." It's all I needed to hear, to give courage to carry on. Or someone who would have the courage to raise serious concerns because they care. They'd take the chance that I'd be upset with them for telling me what maybe I didn't want to hear, or reminding me of the reason to stick at it through a difficult task. Those are pivotal times in our life. They're turning point times when a word well spoken, not a big lecture, not a lot of words, but a timely word makes a difference, helps us find a better path. You see, those words have power. We're going to talk today and take a look in the Proverbs. Some of the Proverbs give us guidance in how to use our words. The Japanese talk about having an economy of words. They got the idea. We Westerners kind of go on and on. But that there would be an economy of words, that we would use our words sparingly and well and wisely. And so the Proverbs give us some indication on how to do that. Proverbs 18:21, the tongue has the power of life and death. 10:21, the lips of the righteous nourish many. The tongue that brings healing is the tree of life, 15:4. A cheerful heart is good medicine, but a crushing spirit dries up the bones. The idea that words bring life or death, the idea that we can crush or we can nourish. What sort of words will you offer? Will your words nourish and heal and bring life? Will you be a blessing to those that encounter you? I hope so. I hope that in my day-to-day interactions, when I'm dealing with those that are hurting, I don't want to add to the weight of their day. They come in often expecting judgment, criticism, that they're not enough or good enough. I want to offer words that would value who they are and offer hope. We read in Proverbs 12 that reckless words pierce like a sword, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. Criticisms, put downs, discouragement. Think of those who've been told, and they sit in my office and tell me about the key people in their lives who said, "They told me I would never amount to much." What's that do to the heart? Or will it simply be the absence of our words? Many people I sit with, when I ask them about their home they grew up in, they say, Well, it wasn't an affectionate home. I don't remember ever being told that I was loved. I don't remember ever having a word of encouragement. So sometimes it's not the piercing by the words that we say, it's sometimes the absence of the words that give definition to our lives, that say, you're valuable. God has said, we're valuable. And he invites us to reflect that. For those who feel very alone or think that those around them are too busy to notice or value or appreciate them, those people who feel very unwanted, they kind of feel like nobody. And they're all around us. There's actually a few of them here today. Perhaps more than you might imagine. You see, even among those who've come to know the Lord, it's still hard for them to believe that someone else would value them and appreciate them. You see, it tells us in Proverbs 15, the heart of the righteous ponders how to answer, but the mouth of the wicked pours out evil things. No filter. You see, it doesn't require thinking about anyone's feelings or thinking about how this would come across or what effect it would have. It just sort of blurts it out. I remember having someone say, I'm just like that. I did want them to be aware that there is a choice, that you can put a lid on that. But the idea that we would ponder, that we would think about what words we would add to the lives of others. A man finds joy in giving an apt reply, and how good a timely word. When someone filters through and thinks what really matters, what's really important. I remember being at the bedside of one of my mentors in his last days before his death, and he had really almost no strength to form words. And when Brenda and I arrived, all he said was, I love you. I remember wishing that we could have talked more. And Brenda very wisely pointed out, what more did he need to say? Apt words. Timely words. A wise man's heart guides his mouth, and his lips promote instruction. So wisdom. We've been talking about wisdom a lot this summer. Have you caught any? Is it contagious? That if you caught wisdom, you see, what we've been hearing is a theme in wisdom. Wisdom is to set your heart and mind on the Lord. To let him speak in and through you. To be his, and so that it's an outflowing of who you are. You see, if you've been to Pato Lakes or some of the other glacier lakes in the Rockies, you see that beautiful kind of turquoise green water. You see, because it's coming through the glacier and it's picking up that silt from the glacier that is coloring the water. You see, from the source, we find what the water is like. And so when your source is the Lord, when you're seeking to be his vessel, he will color your life, your talk, the way you come across to others. And so the wise man's heart guides his mouth, and his lips promote instruction. So, what or who will guide your next words? We live in this time that's called an information highway, which means there's more words and less thought. That's been my observation. There's lots of words. You know, we're texting, we're tweeting, we're emailing, we're phoning. We're constantly in contact. It's just an ongoing thing. We just bing, and we got to look to see who we're going to talk to next, who we're going to contact. And there's lots of energy around getting your words out. but not lots of energy around how we would think about what we said. You know, and we're told that once it's out there in cyberland, that there's no calling it back. Well, it's also true even before cyberland, that the things we say, the words we say, and the pain associated with them, they wound, and we can't really take it back. I often encounter people who say, "I didn't mean that." In a lot of ways, it doesn't matter once you've delivered it. Not that you shouldn't recognize and make repair for what mistake has occurred, but we're given some powerful instruction in the Ephesian letter, Ephesians 4 and 29. Tall order. "Do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouth, but only what is helpful for building others up according to their need, that it may benefit those who listen." I wonder what that would do to us if we thought, "I only want to say that which would build up and benefit others. I don't want to pull anybody down. I want to be somebody who is constructing lives and building good to their benefit. And when they need it, not when I think they need it." You see, sometimes when I think people need my advice, they don't have the same opinion. And you may have noticed that. You know, sometimes when people raise a question in counseling, I say, "Is that a question? Did you want me to respond to that?" See, because I'm not at all sure they do. And so sometimes they have to kind of talk me into that they actually do want to know what I think about that. You see, it's according to their need, not according to mine. It's not because I need to fill the airwaves and need to tell you more things. See, that's one of the challenges of preaching when it isn't a dialogue. You see, I can't tell if you're getting what you need or if you're having to endure what I need. But I hope it's the former and not the latter. You see, because does the Lord shape your speech with this other focus, considering their need and their benefit? Is the Lord reflected in what you say? You see, they get to see a picture of him through you. Or perhaps he hasn't been given access. Does he have your password on your email account? Does he need to read and approve? When I'm sending out emails to people, particularly outside of the organization that I work for, I like to ask someone else to read it, particularly in some of the more sensitive ones that need to go. I try to have somebody else read it to see how it sounds to them, as well as to make me look better by fixing up any of my mistakes. And I wonder if the Lord has access to your email account. Do you ask him, "What do you think? Does this fit with your purposes? Am I honoring you in how I'm communicating, how I'm dealing with people?" You see, our words are actually a reflection of who controls your heart. And you see, although we make Jesus Lord, it seems to be it's a little bit like some of the sporting community's role with coaches. They hire them and fire them and sometimes hire them back. We seem to be a little fickle on when he's Lord and when we want to be in charge. But who's in charge? Do your words reflect the love of God, his graciousness, his patience, his kindness, his mercy, his justice? Sometimes, occasionally. I only speak for myself. You see, because I'm just a work in progress. But my desire would be that more and more often it would reflect his love, his compassion, his kindness, his mercy, his patience, his justice. Well, those kinds of words, it's going to take practice. And hopefully more and more it becomes the case that our words are like his words. There's a place here that involves our choice, that we can be intentional and deliberate about reining our tongue in for his purposes. So, perhaps the first thing in this practice, in terms of having the practice of godly speech, would be to learn to put the brakes on our tongue. That it is a choice, by the way. You don't have to react with the first thing that comes to mind. You can put the brakes on, but take some little practice so you don't crash. You don't lose controls. You see, we often with our voice, and when we raise it, we want to try to control other people. Well, the one we really need to control is ourselves. And that's a more trying task. But we do have access. So, speaking without thinking. When I was a young man, I realize that day is past. I often feel like it oughtn't be yet, but I still think like a young man. But the body only keeps up for 2 or 3 hours, and then it remembers it's not a young man. But as a young man, I remember being challenged. You need to think before you speak. I concluded I need to learn to speak slower. And I deliberately and intentionally made a choice to speak slower. Now, there are some drawbacks on that. Several of you, in fact, have felt the need at various times to finish my sentences. You think I'm not going to get there, at least in a timely manner. I realize that. But Brendan needs a little time. You see, but if I'm going to think before I speak, I have to speak slower. You see, that gives me a little time to self-edit, little time to consider. So we're going to do some practice. See, not knowing what to say isn't a problem, unless you insist on saying it. You see, where we often get in trouble is in not knowing what to say and insisting on saying it. We say foolish things, unnecessary things, unhelpful things. So better not to engage the mouth until the brain is in gear. That is a choice, but it does take practice. Or there'll be much less to clean up. Not just reacting, but choosing to honor God with your responses. Offering words of value. When you offer words of value, you generally offer fewer words. You're not just filling airwaves. So, we've got some proverbs about this. He who holds his tongue is wise. He who answers before listening, that is his folly and his shame. You see, when you think you have the answer before you've heard the other person's life and needs and problems, then you just don't get it. And what's more, you've shown yourself to be someone who doesn't care to get it. When we take the time to listen and until that person feels like they've been heard and understood, and when they feel heard and understood, they'll be ready to receive something. But if they don't think they've been heard and understood, who are we to speak into their lives? So, that requires a restraint. So we listen, but the man of knowledge uses words with restraint. Better to say less and say it well. And the man of understanding is even tempered, that what we do say, we deliver calmly and respectfully. That may mean you have to give yourself a timeout. And parents, timeouts weren't for kids. They were for parents. You need time to gather your thoughts so you don't react. So you don't say things that you wouldn't want to. Well, it doesn't stop then. Throughout life, we need to give ourselves some timeouts. You see, there's various constructive ways you can do that. To being able to say, I need to think about that. That's a good question. I'll get back to you. How about I call you back? I have to give that some thought. You see, now there's a timeout. So instead of saying the reacting thing you were thinking, you actually put the brakes on and think, if God were directing me, suppose he would do that, then how would he have me respond in a way that honors him? We might talk slower. We might have more timeouts. We might take breaks. We might not have an answer for every question. But the ones we have could be used for godly purpose. So, practicing thinking before we speak, imagine that. Especially for those committed to following Jesus, we need to take time to consider how our words will honor the Lord. Will what we say flow out of how the Lord has spoken to us? How has he spoken to you? Has he been gracious and patient and forgiving? Has he offered you multiple choices, chances of returning to him? If that's the way he's kept the conversation going with him, perhaps he's modeling something for you. A personal challenge. Sometimes it's just not talking off the top of my head. It's taking time to prepare my thoughts. When I know I'm going to need to address a difficult situation, I might need to take time gathering my thoughts, but I need to take time with the Lord, asking him how he would have me speak. And what's really matters here, and what's really important, and how can I save my words to a few and say them well? If we win the argument but lose the relationship, that doesn't really seem in keeping with a God who reaches out for relationship. And if you do tell someone you're going to get back to them, make sure you do. Follow it up. I usually like to think of that happening within a day. You know, I've had a chance to sleep, I've had a chance to think, I've had a chance to pray, and I can probably offer a better answer, not a perfect answer, but I can offer a better answer when I give myself some time. So anyway, I remembered hearing this about a poster that was seen in a kindergarten class, or a grade one class, maybe it was. A poster that was instructing these children. Apparently, when I tried to research the origin of this poster, I found that part of it comes from an old Arab proverb. But other than that, it's around in a lot of different forms. I think it's a practical way to tame your tongue. It lays out some questions to ask yourself. Is it true? Remember I said about those people who say something and then say, "Well, I didn't mean it." Is it true, or was it just a way to hurt or punish? Was it a way to take power or control? But sometimes in this day of fake news and all sorts of media inputs, are we being discerning? Have we considered the source? Or are we allowing spin to happen in our conversation, whether that's exaggeration or twisting something that would make others look bad? How can we be sincere and authentic in doing and saying what is true? Another part of speaking what is true comes up in the Proverb 31. It says, "Speak up for those who can't speak for themselves, for the rights of those who are destitute. Speak up and judge fairly. Defend the rights of the poor and the needy." Sometimes the truth we need to speak is that of advocating and being the voice for those who can't speak for themselves. Those are words we need to share. Is it helpful that it would be to build up and not to tear down? There's a lot of put-down language out there. There's a lot of criticisms. But if we are going to consider our own motive, why am I saying this? Why am I passing this along? Why am I speaking? Is it because I care? Is it to build up and benefit someone? Or would I run the risk of passing along gossip? Is there a reason this needs to be repeated? Powerful direction in Ephesians, when it tells us to speak the truth in love, we will in all things grow up into him who is the head, that is Christ. Powerful balance here. To speak truth in love. Either lacking, we lose. Is it inspiring? One of the guys I wish I could meet from Bible times is Barnabas. I'm pretty sure I would have liked him. He got a nickname, Barnabas. It means son of encouragement. I think he was a nice guy to have around. I think he was a guy that helped encourage people and helped them stay on task, keep them on direction, remember what really mattered. He was there for them. I kind of hope that's how I'll be known, as somebody who encourages others, who helps them to be their best. One of the reasons I would like to attend my own funeral because they say, you know, you should be able to evaluate things. I would like to be able to evaluate if I've been staying on task with that encouragement task. Anyway, I'm not expecting that's going to happen, but supporting others, especially through challenging times, so they know they're not alone. That we would be generous in offering affirmation, noticing and commenting on what is good and praiseworthy and excellent, drawing attention to that and to encouraging others with it. At times, offering reminders of what our purpose is so we can stay on mission. We can stick to challenging tasks so that we would be readily sharing the reason for the hope that lies within us. That we would be helping people with that inspiration to endure and be faithful. We got to celebrate with the Taylors, and I know that it was about the Lord and what he's done over these last 25 years. But it's good that we were there and could let them know that we believe in what they're doing and that God is using them for good. It's important we do that with one another. Is it necessary? There'll be times when we will need to raise difficult conversations. Grandma's adage won't always work. If you haven't got something nice to say, don't say anything at all. Well, sometimes we need to say things that aren't so nice, that aren't easy to hear, but necessary because we do care, especially defending the vulnerable. We need to be willing to enter conflict. You see, conflict avoidance isn't a Christian virtue. Although being contentious is one of the things we don't want to be. We're not looking for a fight. But what we are doing is we're willing to speak the truth in love. We're willing to address injustice, not living in a way that we keep quiet because we don't want anyone to be upset with us. You see, because that's not the path of love. Love does raise concerns. And so we don't just bury resentments, but we address the issues with a brother or sister. We take time to prayerfully prepare for these difficult conversations, so what we say is under the Lord's direction. Is it kind? As those who have received God's grace, are we passing grace along? Are we showing his compassion? Are we being fair? As he's actually, God really isn't fair. He errs on the side of giving us mercy. Are we allowing room that there are many more factors and many perceptions besides your own? I've had several conversations with people who say, that's the truth. When they are believers, I can remind them that Jesus said he was the truth, and I'm pretty sure they're not Jesus. So they may have a slice of truth, a piece of, one vision of it, but they don't have the whole picture. Neither you nor I do, ever. We only have a piece of it. He has all of the truth. And so we will be more gracious in how we talk to others if we remember that we don't have a monopoly on truth. Are we speaking to the other in a way that we would want to be spoken to? That would not just include our words, but also our tone. If we're condescending, judgmental, critical, that's going to come across. That isn't how we would want to be spoken to. As those who've been forgiven so much, are we willing to forgive as we've been forgiven? One of the major considerations is timing. Are we being gracious about when we talk to people, where we talk to people, with whom is present when we talk to people? You see, it's not just getting it off my chest. That's for me. If I want to do that, I can go vent into a journal and I can't believe it. What were they thinking? And then when I can crunch that up and then think, oh, I really got pretty excited about that. Why does that matter? What's important about that? I can sort what really matters, and then I can think, now how would I approach them in a way that would actually be constructive? But if you need to vent, especially if I'm working with adolescents, I'll tell them, I think of venting as a lot like throwing up. You feel a little better after you do it. But it's better to do it in a private place and not on people. And so if you do need to vent, that's what I would suggest. I think that's the scriptural verse for that one, by the way, is be angry but sin not. You see, We're not denying that you have those feelings. We're just suggesting you harness how you use them. So, the Proverbs tell us a word aptly spoken is like apples of gold in settings of silver. Think before you speak. Of course, none of us do it consistently. We're all a work in progress, practicing giving control of our tongue to God. And as we do, we will become more and more like Him. In those times when you do speak before you think, it's a good practice to review the process, consider what you can learn from it, so that you can do it differently another time. You can take the time to consider how you can make it right, how you can offer repair for the harm done by your words, or how you said them. Or on the other hand, you may have to, you see, because we come out on both sides of this. We can fall off on either side of the issue. One is that we speak too rashly and harshly. The other is we don't speak when we needed to and could have. And so you can step up and say what needs to be said. Your words are powerful. Let's bring them under the direction of the Holy Spirit so that our lives and our words will reflect His work shining through us. As we practice think before we speak, may the Lord guide our words that we would bring life, healing, and hope. Let's pray. Dear Lord, I'm so thankful for how you reach out to us, how you've spoken to us in your grace, offering your forgiveness, showing us your justice. Help us to learn to speak your way. Give us wisdom when it's good for us to not speak, and courage to speak when we need to. Lord, I would ask that you would help us to learn your grace to speak truth in love. In Jesus' name, amen.